I guess we're dedicating today to different perspectives about where we are in 2017 and what kind of future we may be facing. So we will be opening up the phone lines today, and I do have guests that we'll be talking to today. And I just want to say up front that, you know, I don't consider myself naturally a dark person, although maybe my family would argue that because my husband's much more of the optimist. But I feel, because I teach young people and I work with, you know, people all the time about their life issues, that I'm someone who has some sense of light to me, that I believe that there's always opportunities for change and growth. So having said that, what I've been kind of mulling over when it comes to the whole idea of Earth Day and where we are as a species and where we are as a habitat, it is a little on the darker side. And it's one of those days where I don't have an end goal to this conversation, because usually I kind of have an idea of where I think we're going to go. But I don't have an end goal today or a cautionary tale or anything specific that I want to share. But I more have these ideas that I've been grappling with and kind of mulling over in my head, and wanted to share them with you and kind of see what kind of thoughts come up for you when you hear what I have to say. See where they take you. And it's another reason why I brought a guest in, because I thought I need different perspective on this, and definitely perspective of someone much younger than myself, because I feel like, and I'm noticing it myself, that the older we get, the closer we get maybe to the end of our run here on the planet, the more negative sometimes that we can become, or the more pessimistic, or maybe if we've lived through enough disappointments, whatever it is, I'm fully aware often that I do well with a perspective of someone much younger. So We're going to be looking at different perspectives on this idea of Earth Day. So let's start off with a little history on Earth Day for those of you who might not remember, that the first Earth Day actually was celebrated in 1970. There's some argument about exactly who was the first person to talk about it. But when you read the history of Earth Day, the name Senator Gaylord Nelson comes up over and over again. And he is considered to be the person that proposed the first Earth Day, because he was shocked and horrified by the huge oil spill in Santa Barbara in 1969. And so he reached out to different activists and different people around the country, professors, and put together a staff of 85 people who were able to rally together. And on the 20th of April in 1970, 20 million people around the country, because this was an event in the United States, 20 million people protested, participated in sit-ins and teach-ins, and gathered to talk about the environment in ways that they could defend the planet. And I remember the first Earth Day in 1970. I was 9 years old and in third grade, and I remember our compost pile, and I remember the activities at the school and the excitement around it, and singing songs, and there was drumming, and I can remember that and the hopefulness. And I also can remember that the big issues we were concerned about were pollution. There was a lot of the PSAs that were running with the Native American man crying because we were dropping litter. And I mean, our concerns about the earth seemed very minimal at the time. It was mostly about keeping it clean and keeping the water clean and keeping the air clean. You know, we had huge struggles with air pollution, air quality in Los Angeles at the time. And I remember all that clearly. And so after that first Earth Day in 1970, the growth of the Earth Day movement, the environmental movement, seemed pretty consistent and stayed very consistent throughout the decades. And that first Earth Day movement was at the heart of the creation and public support and demand for the EPA, the Environmental Protection Act, which is under fire as we speak. It was also the beginning of the Clean Air Act, the Water Quality Improvement Act, the Endangered Species Act, and other environmental laws that all fell into line post this first Earth Day and environmental awareness movement. It was interesting because it wasn't as if there weren't people being active trying to fight pollution or fouled water or air problems before that. There were activists, you know, in the 1800s. But this was the first time that all of these different factions had come together to kind of unite their forces and their interests and their issues into one big massive group. And so Earth Day has grown and grown with each decade. In 2010, 225,000 people gathered and marched on the National Mall. They also set out to plant a billion trees at that time, and they made their goal by 2012. Last year, on Earth Day, the United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon asked world leaders to sign the Paris Climate Agreement, and President Obama signed on Earth Day. So there's been a constant kind of growth and movement and awareness. And also this year, the United Nations declared April 22nd, our Earth Day, as Mother Earth Day, to remind us that the Earth and its ecosystems provide us with life and sustenance. And I think that that's all so important, the awareness, the awakening, the movement, the bringing together of people and their passions. But then there's another part of me that feels like we don't recognize our inherent part of the problem. That if you look back over the course of history, there isn't really a time in recorded history where human beings have been great stewards of the planet. I mean, we actually have been leading the charge of fouling the planet since early civilizations. Many groups of tribal people and cultures and civilizations had to leave the places that they lived because they had deforested the area or wiped out the species or fouled their water or their air, and they had to pick up and go. And so this idea that in 1970, all of a sudden, things had gotten so bad that we realized we needed to turn course and go back to a time where we took care of the planet, there is no back in time, because there really isn't a time that we were doing well. We've actually had to go back and keep cleaning up the messes we've made over and over and over again. It's like, it's as if almost the awareness that we're gaining further down the path just keeps causing us or forcing us to go back and clean up those inherent messes. And so that dark part of me that I said I was going to talk about wonders if, you know, maybe instead of focusing so much on all the ways that we're going to protect the planet and save the planet and nurture the planet and protect all the species, we're really just causing more damage and harm, that all of our fixes really aren't leading us to things getting better. And in a way, it's our overpopulation of the planet that's the greatest damage that's being done continuously. And because we see ourselves as separate from the environment, as the caregivers or the caretakers of the environment, that continues to make us part of the problem, because we don't recognize we are just part of the ecology, the ecosystem. With this idea that we're separate and that we need to protect the nature that's separate from us, we continue to be part of the problem, the driving source of the problem. And so here's the dark part. I wonder if maybe we should stop all of the efforts to do all this protecting and just allow the eventual destruction or extinction of our species happen. And then that way, all those things we say we care about, the earth, nature, other life forms, plants and animals, will have a chance to regenerate and survive, because we will then be out of the equation. And that's not as dark as it gets, because I have one other thought on it too, as you're chewing that idea a little bit, chewing on that. It's not lost to me that April has also been dedicated to sexual assault and awareness, sexual assault prevention and awareness about sexual violence against women. And isn't it ironic that at the time we are celebrating Mother Earth Day, that we also have to have a whole month dedicated to protecting and honoring and revering women as a whole? That the feminine is under attack, not just as a planet and as a species, but as an entire part of our population. That sexual assault and sexual exploitation and domestic violence are not in the decline, they're actually on the rise. And so this assault on our planet and the epidemic levels of assault on women, not only in our culture but around the world, I think says a lot about our inability as human beings to really honor and protect and revere the sacred feminine that is women. And so here we are on Tuesday, a few days from Earth Day, and I'm wondering, what do we do with all of this? Can we shift the tide? Is there an awareness that can happen that can absolutely change this domineering masculine energy that is dominating the planet, this kind of doing idea that we can bully our way into fixing all of the problems, because I think that's part of the problem, is that we feel like we have to take it on and lead the charge and make things different. How do we allow space for that feminine energy to rise and also create space for women and men and children to feel protected and honored and nurtured within the scope of Mother Earth? So that's where I'm at today. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I am Elizabeth Barrett, and we do gather every Tuesday to have these conversations, and we welcome you to be part of the conversation at 805-781-3875. You can also find our show on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can email me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org and look under the News Talk tab, and all of our shows are there in wonderful brief. Keeps us up to date. I noticed that we're completely up to date as of today. Thank you. And if you like to podcast, if you're of the generation that understands how all the technology works, then please go to your App Store, iTunes, and search for A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist and hit subscribe. And you'll be able to have all of our shows downloaded so you can listen at your convenience. So having had my say, I want to introduce my guest today, Robin Liepman, also known as Bloom, in his professional and performance life, and also his work as an environmental activist. Robin is a local here to our area. He is a permaculture designer. He's an event organizer, an earth activist, and musician. And Robin comes to us with great credentials. He has a BA in psychology and a BS in cognitive science, and he is working to be credentialed to do permaculture design. So, Robin, You're younger than I am. Mm-hmm. How did that introduction strike you?
Well, I see a lot of resonance and a lot that's coming to the surface in the collective consciousness of where we're at in the world. Thank you for introducing me and bringing me onto the show and into this conversation. And one thing that I think about all the time is how it looks like the world is kind of imploding and getting worse and worse. But at the same time, when we look at it, at the revolution that's not necessarily being publicized by mass media of sustainability and regenerative technologies and activism, we can also see that the world is getting better. And we just hope that it's getting better at a rate faster than it's getting worse. And I've seen a lot of work in the world in my travels. I co-organized an organization called Blooming Biodiversity, and we traveled to over 100 permaculture centers and schools and places that had regenerative systems that people were actively doing, and we brought people together to work on the land and brought in music and workshops and yoga and things that made it exciting so we could get people back in touch with the earth and with the environment. And what we saw was that there's kind of like this network. In terms of mycology, it's called the mycelium network. It's the immune system, kind of the autoimmune response of the earth, which is part of the people coming together to create regenerative solutions. And I've seen enough of it to know that it's actually having a positive impact on the world. And I can definitely see that part of the fear is that we're causing so much destruction that the world would be better without us. But I like to think of the concept of Gaia, which is looking at Earth as one living organism. And part of that is seeing us as an essential part of that ecosystem. And so we're here for a reason, but we also have to reattune our actions to be a positive, to have a positive effect on the Earth and to be a positive steward of bringing in regenerative and sustainable changes rather than continuously over-consuming and destroying the planet. So I've been inspired by what I've seen. And also I think about how if we as humans have gotten ourselves into this mess, we certainly have the ability and creativity to get ourselves out of it and to start repairing the earth as well.
Which is why I brought you in, because it's that young energy and perspective that I think is so important. So I'm glad that you've joined us today. And I want to invite Ed into the conversation. Ed, what are your thoughts?
Oh, look, I just really have to agree with everything you said in your introduction, Elizabeth. I certainly feel that we often, in even trying to solve the problems that the globe's facing, we see ourselves as a part of it rather than an integral part of it. And often, you know, our solutions and often the way we even view the world is a very ego-based sort of things instead of more of a depth or more of a higher self perspective. And I think that, you know, we have to look in before we can look out. And I think I think that looking in practices like meditation and stuff like that, after a while, you can't actually ignore the fact that we are intrinsically one with, you know, the planet that we're on and in and a part of. And, yeah, I just think that I just really wanted to say I just agree with everything you said in your intro. And I think it's really synchronistic that, that the Walk a Mile in My Shoes Day mm-hmm. and everything in Earth Day is all around the same time, because a lot of it is that patriarchally based mentality that our society seems to have that, you know, often I feel is, you know, behind a lot of the problems that we're facing.
Yeah, I think it's more than just one issue. And I think that's what makes it challenging to address, because we can't just go towards one area and say, now we've solved it, that it's not just about habitat or the environment. It is about how we treat each other, how we nurture children and women and animals. It's all of the pieces. And I think that's what overwhelms people. And Ed, thank you for taking the time to call. All right. So Robin, what brought you to this place, and what was kind of your path growing up here to now being dedicated as an earth activist and permaculture expert? And you're going to have to educate me about permaculture, because I, to be honest, really only know it on a surface level. So tell me a little bit about your path and what brought you here.
Yeah, well, I grew up in San Luis Obispo and then went to college at UC Santa Cruz. I was studying psychology, but I was slowly getting interested in the permaculture projects. And there they just called it organic gardening. And I would visit the community gardens and take some classes that were outside of classes for my major on transformative action and tools for world changers and education for sustainable living. So I was starting to learn about this whole bigger movement that I didn't really know anything about. And then once I graduated college, I started traveling, and Bill Plotkin in his book Nature and the Human Soul would call this the wanderer in the cocoon stage, the point of life where you're just wandering, trying to figure out your purpose. And I ended up finding in Nicaragua a permaculture farm that I stayed at for a month, because actually my passport was stolen, so I kind of had to be there. And the universe just guided me to be on this permaculture farm. And I was told that if I stay there for a month on this island of Ometepe, then I would be taught to be a permaculture ninja. And that's pretty much what I was taught how to do. And that started the journey, and I continued doing it and learning about permaculture. I took my permaculture design course in Canada and started this whole permaculture organization that did tours. And so the basic meaning of permaculture is, I like to break it down to the technical, which is permanent agriculture and permanent culture. So it's actually a design system, a holistic design system that looks at how to build not only farms and gardens for growing organic food in a way that reflects how things grow in nature, especially in jungles and in ecosystems where everything's supporting each other, mm-hmm. but it also is a way to grow communities. And so permaculture is a whole holistic design system that's based on three ethics, which is care for the earth, care for the people, and fair share, and then 12 design principles. And it can apply to everything from community building to actual structural building and growing food. And it's been going strong for a long time, and people look at it from different lenses and have different ways of interacting with permaculture. But it's really, for me, it's really a way that people can get back in touch with growing their own food, making sure that their food is chemical free and that it's just purely from the land, and also getting in touch with the communities that grow around that food production.
So where do you see, and I'm not even sure which part to tap into, you know, our local community is one piece, but I guess we can do wonderful things here. But if the rest of the planet is just bearing down on us with mm-hmm. their continued totalitarian type of agriculture, which mm-hmm. is just, right, strip the earth and lay down chemicals and force growth, is permaculture, this is going to sound strange, is permaculture masculine enough to take on that energy? Or is that feminine, you know, that beautiful energy of caring for each other going to get overwhelmed and lost?
Yeah, I definitely feel that permaculture has very strong, what I like to call divine masculine and divine feminine, or I guess I could say holistic feminine and masculine rather than the patriarchal and matriarchal. And permaculture was, the term was coined by two Australian guys. And so there's that masculine energy of like, let's build it, let's make this happen. But it's based on how things grow in the Amazon and in the jungle, and how there's this larger ecosystem of Mother Nature. And there's a big influence from this idea of Mother Earth. In South America, they call it Pachamama, or Gaia in Greek, of Mother Earth already having this inherent wisdom of how to grow things symbiotically and create this larger ecosystem. So permaculture, in a way, is cultivating ecosystems. And nowadays you can have plants from different parts of the world that you bring together into one land and have them interact, and also tending to the animals. And I know it's not the only solution, but I see it as one key in the larger solution of creating sustainable ways of living. And beyond just sustainable, there's the word regenerative, which is not just sustaining what is, but also making way for new things to generate. So in this new regenerative paradigm that's being formed, I see permaculture as an essential component. And I really think about that idea of the masculine and the feminine, and this idea of bringing life in from the earth as the feminine rebalancing of an earth that's been created in grids with streets and concrete. And what I really like to see is when this regrowth happens in urban and suburban environments. And I've seen a lot of urban gardening in Los Angeles. In Portland, there's something called the Village Building Convergence and the City Repair Movement, which just a couple weekends ago, we had our first one here in San Luis Obispo. And we painted murals in the street, put in gardens in the front yard. We went to Mayor Heidi Harman's house and put in some front yard gardens and a little free library that people can come and put books into or take books from. We went to the Chumash Farm to honor the indigenous, the Chumash elders. And in Portland, they've been doing it for 16 years. So you can go anywhere, especially in Southeast Portland, and just see front yard gardens everywhere, little free libraries, community boards, murals in the street. And it's this amazing thing that's emerging where it feels like the feminine is rebalancing into the places where the masculine has taken over to try to help heal the earth from beneath the concrete sprouting up through the cracks.
It's a perfect time in spring to talk about it also.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Robin Liepman, and he's also known as Bloom in his work as a musician and an earth activist. He is passionate about permaculture, and we're talking about Earth Day and the upcoming celebration of our planet, of our habitat, on this Saturday, the 22nd, the annual day. But I also kind of threw out some ideas to see where you're at around Earth Day. Do you still have energy or excitement around the celebration, or do you feel like we're in a time of mourning? Should we be having a wake on Saturday, some sort of kind of dark procession down the street to kind of say goodbye to the environment as we know it? I wonder if part of our trajectory forward is needing to have some sort of wake ritual, letting go of the earth as we knew her to be, and start moving towards adapting to what do we look like post the Gaia that we once had and have changed and altered permanently. How do we move forward? But maybe we need to have that grieving process. And I'm curious to know what you think about this. Our number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of the conversation. I also dropped in earlier in the show the idea that, you know, it is not lost on me that at the same time we're kind of struggling with our role in the world and the environmental and movement in dealing with climate change and the UN's efforts to declare Saturday the 22nd as Mother Earth Day, that we also are spending the month of April raising awareness about sexual assault and exploitation and domestic violence against women of all ages. And how can we expect that a culture, a humanity that could assault and exploit and hurt women have any capacity to protect the earth? 805-781-3875. So what about that idea? I mean, should we be having some sort of funeral service, some mourning and adapting to moving forward? Or do you think there is a possible regeneration?
Well, I definitely feel like the picture that's painted in mass media definitely is more dreary than how things might actually be. And I feel like it is really important to honor the darkness of what's coming up and honor that there is a lot of pain and a lot of destruction, both in the earth, in with women across the world. And I think it's important to have days for that and bring it up. And it's unfortunate that we need to, but it's also really important to bring it to awareness so we can honor it, grieve about it, and then look with new eyes at some solutions. And I feel like the importance of celebrating Earth Day, people say every day should be Earth Day and also every day should be Women's Rights Day, but the importance of having specific days for it is it really brings together larger collective consciousness and people to mobilize and celebrate and maybe even make some intentions about how we can be better stewards of a beautiful, harmonious Earth. And
but are we stewards or are we just part of the ecosystem? Because that's where I think we get into trouble.
That's a good point, because we are definitely part of the ecosystem just as much as all the plants and animals around us. And we also have certain cognitive functions and neural wirings that allow us to do certain things that also we have a lot of responsibility of with these extra connected neurons in our brains of things that we can do so we can press a button to send a bomb down onto another country. We can also come together and create all these amazing regenerative technologies that are helping to sequester carbon from the atmosphere and lower the carbon cycles. And we can create systems that clean up oil spills with mushrooms and mycelium networks. And a big part of it is we're not coming up with all of this ourselves, but we're really utilizing what already is and learning from nature itself, learning from the plants and learning how we can help to heal the planet through solutions that are constantly being developed.
Which is a great point, because if we are going to embrace the many rapid changes that technology brings, the hope is that we can use that same mental power to harness it in good ways. It's that balance of power. Our story is about, you know, the individual human right to pursue happiness and to make money and to create their own lives. And we don't teach a story in our culture about our responsibilities to all living things, not just other humans, but to all living things. We really do sell a story that if you come up with an app or some sort of device or some sort of thing, even if it's a throwaway thing, it's your right to sell it. And I think that gets us into trouble. Hi, Wes. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm curious. I enjoy the conversation. I'm curious who started this movement in Portland, and also how does it apply to the public spaces around here, schools and parks, and what can we do as a community, and what's involved getting approval from the city to do something?
To expand this idea of permaculture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So who did actually start it and how did it?
Yeah, so this project of city repair and the village building convergence started about 17 years ago with a man named Mark Lakeman, and he had a team of other people in the city repair group. And the idea was just to bring more places where people can gather and connect into urban and suburban environments. And they started out their first year with just a cob. And for those of you who don't know what cob is, it's just natural building from the earth, taking mud and clay and silt and sand together and making a bench. And they did 10 days of everyone gathering. Over those 10 days, about 200 to 300 people came and gathered. And they said, we've never seen something like this before. And they built the bench. And then over the years, they ended up connecting with people in the political arena, and they ended up getting rights to put up little free libraries, poetry stands, community boards, and paint murals in the street intersections, which slows down traffic, makes it safer for the kids to play, and they've eventually gone to taking down the fences in between their houses to create more of an eco-village type of setting within the neighborhoods.
And so I guess Wes' other question is, how do we go about getting permits or, you know, making change within our own community?
Yeah, a big part of it in terms of permits is just reaching out and having conversations on the phone, in person, on email. And a lot of people stop with the self-limiting beliefs that it's not possible. But what I've found and what many have found is that as soon as you reach out, there's people in office that are just as excited about these ideas and happy to work with you. And there's even been many instances I've seen of people having a certain idea about a mayor or a certain political figure that is going to say no to everything. But as soon as they reach out to them, they're actually very receptive and open. And then in terms of gathering people and making it more public, it's a matter of just going door to door, saying, hey, this is something fun and exciting that would really improve our neighborhood or our experience of living in this place.
Wes, does that help?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. And of course, again, the dark side of me says, that's all fine and good in Portland and San Luis Obispo, but take that message to Alabama or Mississippi or Oklahoma. You know, I've said a couple times in the show that I would love to see this group of 95 million millennials, because that's how many of you there are, spreading out over the country, because I think if you all cluster in these already receptive areas, we're not really serving the movement forward that we really need to start getting into areas that would be less receptive. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Robin Liepman. We're talking about Earth Day and should we be mourning or celebrating as we move forward? You are listening to Public Radio KCBX, and we'll be back to take your calls.
Is anyone out there? Does anybody listen or care anymore? We are living on a dying planet. We're killing everything that's alive. And anyone who tries to deny it wears a tie and gets paid to lie. So I wrote these songs for a dying planet.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and that was Joe Walsh singing his song for the dying planet. And I warned you, Robin, that I was feeling a little dark today, which is why I wanted to bring in your youthful perspective on Earth Day and where we're going, and also to continue our conversations about, you know, what is the story we're telling each other about our role on the Earth, and do we need to get in, you know, as I said before we went to break, is it dangerous to all cluster in one place that's already receptive? How do we get into places that are not receptive at all?
Well, one thing that I've seen traveling is that there's more pockets of people doing these solutionary earth activist work around the world than most people would imagine. And especially when I was at Standing Rock in December, I met people from all over, from Florida, from Alabama and Arkansas, from Oregon, from even from Alaska, from New Zealand, people from different parts of the states and different parts of the world that were actually in places of need where there's not big hubs of this kind of activity, that were working on amazing projects. I've met people in Houston, Texas, that are right in the most industrial, dirty parts of Houston, and they've transformed a big parking lot and turned it into a big permaculture community garden that people can come in and volunteer on and take food home from. And I've seen people in the middle of Brooklyn and in southeast Los Angeles that are doing permaculture workshops with kids, with the people in the local environment, and building food forests and gardens so that it's no longer a food desert, but it's actually a place of resiliency where people can get their food. So it's something that is sprouting out, but it still needs a lot more work and a lot more attention.
But I like that there's a whole language that's emerging around this idea also that seems very millennial-centric, which is nice. And also going back to the idea of the technologies coming together in such a way that you actually, you know, can build communities remotely, virtually, and kind of spread what you're doing to each other, which we didn't have the capacity to do 40 years ago. Diane, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. I love your program.
Thank you, Diane.
I'm in Santa Barbara, and I've been a professional gardener since 1980. And yesterday I went to a protest with the Secretary of Interior, who was here in Santa Barbara, wanting to start drilling again in the channel. And it just makes me feel that the most immediate danger right now is the president. And the values, the disregard for climate change, the whole thing just depresses me. No end, A. B, I love that you bring up the issue of women, because a long time ago, I heard John O'Donohue talk about how the Celts saw the earth as the body of the goddess and saw it as a sacred thing. And that image is so perfect for me, how feminism and caring for our home are really one issue. Mm-hmm. And that's it's I have a hard time feeling hopeful, but I do, it does help to hear younger people, and there are so many wonderful projects going on all over the world. So I try to hold on to those. But being at this protest yesterday, it's just is all I can say.
Well, and I can feel your pain in that, because that kind of brought out my conversation at the top of the show, is just feeling a little dark and heavy. And I'm glad we have Robin and the millennials and their perspective, because I think they are where you and I might have been, right, 40 years ago at my first Earth Day experience, you know, when I was 9 years old and just feeling excited to do something, be part of it. And I think, you know, that's part of the whole regenerative nature of life, is that the, you know, elders or the those that have moved down the path of life kind of move out of the way and make room for the new energies and the new spirit. And so I'm glad that you're out there fighting the fight. And I think, Diane, yours and my job is to keep hugging those young people and say, we're with you. We'll do whatever, you know, we are here for you. Because I think if we stand aside a little and make space for new ideas, it's going to be much more helpful than continuing to try to lead the charge doing things exactly as we are.
Oh, honey, you're always so positive. I love it.
Thank you, Diane. Well, you made my day. That's the first time I've laughed all day. So thank you for calling. So what do you think, Robin? And you weren't at the protest yesterday.
No, I wasn't. But I've been at a lot of similar protests lately, and I was at a big women's march that happened pretty close after the inauguration. And I definitely do see the presidency as one of the most immediate dangers. I agree with you on that. And I also see a lot of people really coming to the streets and coming together and saying, okay, it's now or never. We really have to make a positive impact now. And so I feel like there's a little initial phase of people just not even thinking it was worth it to do anything. But now I feel like people are kind of coming together saying, like, okay, we have to take this into our own hands. And it kind of has made the situation has kind of made things more urgent and more pressing, and has, in a way, mobilized more people to come together to take positive action.
So the challenge is, of course, maintaining that momentum and mm-hmm. maintaining that energy and, you know, from a therapeutic standpoint, from our psychology background, part of me feels like there has to be a letting go in order for space for new to come forward. And so when I talk about, you know, should Earth Day this year be a day of mourning and not a day of celebration, I'm not just being facetious. There's a part of me that thinks of that we have to really take a moment to let go of that original Earth Day in 1970, where we were mostly worried about clean air and, you know, litter, mm-hmm. and to say that ship really has sailed, and now if we want any sort of future, we need to flip and have a whole different perspective of where we're going. Mm. I'd also like to introduce another guest that has joined us in the studio. Sandra Mitchell is with the Earth Day Alliance here in San Luis Obispo, and I know there's an event on Saturday that everyone is invited to take part of. And I'm sure you heard kind of my introduction about celebration versus mourning. Where are you in your feelings about Earth Day and the environmental movement?
I'm in both places. It's Marshall, Sandra Marshall.
I'm sorry,
it's okay.
Sandra.
It's okay.
I apologize. Marshall is my guest here.
Somebody hears me out there, they'll know it's my voice. But anyway, I have a lot of the similar things in that part of letting go. I've been doing this for 27 years. So I was probably your age when I started and helping to stop Diablo Canyon and different things like that. And it's sad to let go, but I'm really excited that I have such a great crew of young people that are helping. Not a whole lot, but they're really dedicated. And they go to Cal Poly or Cuesta, and they'd like to see more students involved. But that's kind of how it was when I started. On your block, you might be the only one, or there were 50 of us in San Luis Obispo, but we became a huge movement, made a lot of changes then. And we now have that opportunity with Trump. It's a horrible thing that it's happening, but this is where we really have to push the envelope. And that's what we want to people to do at Earth Day. This has got to be the change. And people have put it Earth Day into green flowers and plants and all that. But no, it's never been that way for me. It's been the whole being of how you live. And so if we can embrace more people to see that, like you've been talking about, I heard you went driving in, this is what we need to happen. And I just booked a bunch of young guys, I'd say, for Earth Day. Well, women too. And they are going to come out as they play music, but they're also going to come out and do yoga. This is what they do during the day. This is the way they spend their lives. So they're already coming with a new message instead of, I want to come out and party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to come out and party. And also a little counter message to, my only value on earth is the job I get and the money I make and the house I build. And I think that's when we talk about permaculture. It's a shift in just our attitudes in general, but what are our values and what is makes a quality of life. So the event on Saturday is at El Choro Regional Park from 11 to 5. It's going to be food and music and awareness, and it sounds like just coming together, like-minded people.
Well, and it's a year about action. So we want, just like the Women's March, which we would like more people to come from different sectors of the community to participate or to speak. We're actually going to have a time where there's hot spots where people can go on the stage and talk about or say something in less than 5 minutes that is powerful, meaningful, a fact, what people can do. Because it's all about we can't just come to events and sit
party
around. And yeah, we need to get to work.
And I think a little bit about Coachella, and so many of my students were there this weekend, and how that's, to me, such counter to the message and energy and where we should be putting our time. I'm not against the music and the coming together and celebrating life and joy, but we don't have the we don't have the time to just make everything about fun. There has to be the mingling of all things. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests are Robin Leafman and Sandra Marshall from the Earth Day Alliance, and we're taking your calls. Dawn, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, good afternoon to everybody. Well, I work in the clean energy sector, and I just wanted to share some good news. I think that I know for me, too, that it's without my job, I think I would probably be feeling a little bit more desperate. But when I was able to put my energy towards working on clean energy, if you will, it's provided therapy for me. So, you know, I think that a lot of times we only get some of the bad news, and that there's just tons of good news, and that in 2016, our U.S. power sector, that means our power plants, had the lowest carbon emissions to since 1990. So we've really been able to expand. And something like wind and solar capacity in the United States has increased over 600% since 2007. So, and when we look at what's happening here in this sector as far as clean energy generation, is that we are able to note that the market forces are taking over. So right now what's happened is that solar energy has now surpassed, it's cheaper to generate solar than it is to dig coal. And I think that that's one of the realities that the administration is going to run into, is that, you know, the forces of the market are really going to dictate. And because we've done so many things around the world in pushing this industry, that we're going to continue to move forward. So I want to just bring in that bright note to you.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate it, because I think we need to have as much light in the dark as possible to bring the balance. And I appreciate you taking the time to call. You're smiling, Robin.
Yeah, I think it's something that a lot of people aren't as aware of, and it's very exciting, just possibilities of renewable energy technologies and how much it really is spreading. I mean, Santa Fe, New Mexico is planning on by 2050 to be completely run on solar because they get so much sun there. There's a bunch of places in the world that are going in that direction of being as renewable and free of dependency on fossil fuels as possible.
That's really, it is exciting. Charles, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
I was just going to say, I was going to talk about warming today, or warming the earth. I've been an environmental activist most of my adult life and try to live by those ideals. My wife and I have been off the grid for about 36 years and grow our own food and try to live very, very small footprint. But I see the forces of our system, our culture, what I call the growth monster, or what would H.G. Wells would call the forbidden planet, where the machine needs power and needs energy and needs resources, and the more it gets, the bigger it gets, and it never stops. And I've seen it all my life. I'm 75, and I just don't know if we can ever stop that mentality, that system. It's just eating up the earth. We have to produce more. We have to consume more. And keep going. Otherwise, we're a failure. That's what we're preached. I wish it was different, but I just don't know if what your guest Robin says. I think that's wonderful. I love that young idealism, but sometimes I feel like it's trying to bail out a sinking ship with a thimble.
And I appreciate you, Colin Charles, because I think your sense of mourning is resonating with a lot of people who have done this work for a long time, who have been involved in this conversation. But one of the things as you were talking that kind of struck me, and as Dawn conversation about renewable energy, is one of the things we don't talk about is that, you know, we assume that the United States is going to lead the charge in all of these changes, that we've been the dominating country for the last 50, 60 years, maybe longer, and that we're somehow going to be the ones who change it. And what if we're not? I mean, what if we really are the dinosaurs in the movement, and China and South America and all these places actually make the big switch, and we end up kind of looking like the fossils over in the corner? I mean, do you and part of me feels like that extra rush of testosterone that we're feeling with dropping bombs and more masculine emerging is kind of that last gasping effort by, you know, this old model to try to hang on.
Well, I definitely feel that it's a global movement, and there's been these conferences, the Conference of the Parties, where people gather together with the United Nations and talk about climate change and what solutions we can make and actually come up with action plans. And I was at one in Peru, and I have friends that were at the ones in Paris and Morocco. And so it is a global conversation, and there are solutions coming from many different countries. And at this point, it's beyond just one country taking the lead, but it's really a bunch of people from around the world, because we are so connected now with the internet. And I totally hear you also, Charles, about mourning for the earth. And there's one of my mentors, Joanna Macy, who really sees that as essential to coming up with solutions and taking action, is that we first have to really feel the pain of the earth and really mourn what's going on. Otherwise, we won't be fully motivated to do anything about it if we're just ignoring that. And I think it's really important for us to look at the shadow of what's going on the earth in order for anything to grow out of it, just like how compost is dark and in the compost, new life can spring forth. So I think it's very essential for us to mourn for the planet, and also for us to go through that and emerge on the other side with blossoming flowers and sprouting plants.
Sandra, does that make you want to jump up and down just a little bit to hear that energy 27 years after you had that same hope?
I've kind of go in and out on that. I was thinking about how it used to be and everything. We were going to stop nuclear power. You know, and look at the fight that still continues here. It's not that the people don't have the energy. We don't have the money to get the voice out there. And that's why I, being a publisher of a progressive paper, I say don't invest in large mainstream media. Invest in your local. Right now, mm-hmm. I think the media is not helping us. They're making it seem okay to drop bombs. Mm-hmm. You know, no. We're having Earth Day. This is what we don't want to have. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be spoken about a lot more.
Well, and I also think that a lot of people believe that mainstream media is how messages are being sent. But for the millennials, for Robin's generation, they're not involved in mainstream media. I mean, their network of communicating, right? Your news sources are much more small. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's lots of global networks and there's online platforms and organizations like New Mundo, Project Nuevo Mundo, Tribe of Awakening Sovereignty, Montaya, all these projects where it's building these global reaches of people that are connecting to different land-based projects and also the networks in between. And you mentioned Coachella before. That's one example of a festival, but there's also this whole different type of festival called transformational festivals where they really bring in the permaculture mindset, the yoga, the consciousness building. And even though people come and have all these amazing awakening experiences and say, I'm going to help make the world a better place, even that is not fully sustainable. So this festival I was just at Lucidity, it was their last festival in the series because they just bought land in Oregon and they're making the shift from this weekend-long festival where they set up and take down to just grounding into a land-based project where they can have educational seminars and they can have people come together for smaller, intimate gatherings to really come up with solutions.
Charlie, I appreciate you waiting. What did you want to share today?
Hey, to begin with, the third week in April is Native Plant Week. Because, you know, mm-hmm. I'm with the Plant Society. What somebody's saying about plants, get out and enjoy the plants. Our local chapter has some activities, and there's going to be a drive and stroll on Figueroa Mountain meeting at 9 a.m. at the Figueroa Mountain fire station on Figueroa Road. Also, I see care of the environment and plants as part of a sacred calling. You know, the earth was good. I look at the golden rule is do unto others. Many other faith things is don't do unto others what you wouldn't have done with yourself. So polluting, digging, exploiting is what we should not do to others. You know, we're called upon to love our neighbors as ourselves. And I think that the reverse of the golden rule is, you know, the other state, the negative statement is, I think, important, is don't do unto the world what you would not have done to you.
And I appreciate that, Charlie, because it goes along with what I brought up at the beginning of the show, that it's not lost on me that we have Earth Day and Mother Earth Day and awareness about the environment in April. At the same time, we're also trying to spread awareness about sexual assault and sexual exploitation of women, and that this idea that we are doing unto each other exactly what we're doing to the earth. And until we are able to revere and care for and honor women and young women, women of all ages, and care for them in the way they should be, we're going to have a really hard time caring for the earth as it is. So, Linda, you get the last word today. What's on your mind?
Hi. I heard one of the previous speakers talk about the library, the Loaning Center,
mm-hmm.
and I just recently joined the Kindness Matters here in Los Osos. And hi.
Yep, and so you joined Kindness Matters?
Yeah. So I just got a little list of things, but I haven't gotten that involved. So I want to, this lending library, little center for the neighborhood, for sharing and all that would be a nice way to get involved in helping people.
Absolutely. And I love the, you know, all the small community actions to bring people together, because if everyone can find something they're passionate about and connect to those people, the awareness grows. So, Sandra, tell everyone what they can do this Saturday.
Well, you can go to the walks downtown, the March for Science, and then get on the bus, which we get free bus rides out to El Chorro Regional Park, and come out for the day from 11 to 5. We're going to have teach-ins. Every half hour, there'll be a teach-in to teach you about things like slow money in San Luis Obispo for sustainable community. Trees and climate change. We'll be talking about climate change from the scientists' perspective. So we are having huge hands-on science, and a section for children, 15 different booths where kids can get involved. So this is all about the youth, because that's where it started. My mother started me, and that's what's when I was about 6 years old. Lots of entertainment. I want to say that most of the entertainment is from the younger community. So we're bringing out a whole new dynamic group of kids to talk about things, and 70 different groups in San Luis Obispo County are coming out to show you what they're doing. And it's not all just about plants. It's about action. It's about community. It's about helping each other. So this is a way to build our activities together and meet each other.
So we have our Science March Saturday morning in downtown San Luis Obispo. Do you know what time that starts and gathers?
10 a.m.
10 a.m., the March for Science.
At Emerson School.
At Emerson School. And then you can take the bus for free. Is there any cost to come out to the Earth Day Fair?
Only if you want to make a donation.
Which we love.
Yes.
To support your efforts of 27 years putting on this event, Sandra. And that's remarkable, because so few people have the energy to do anything for 2 years. So thank you for spearheading this, because I hope that this year the energy grows and you have a new resurgence of energy. So this Saturday at El Chorro Regional Park, a great place to go with your family. Bring your children, because it is all about educating the younger generation. And Robin Liefman, thank you for coming out and sharing your story today. I think this is our first conversation, because I need you to come back and talk about festivals and permaculture.
Yes. Thank you.
And will you be a part of the event on Saturday?
I'm actually going to be up in Oakland, and I'll be on my way to be a teacher's assistant for Starhawk's permaculture design course on Vancouver Island and an eco-village design education. So I'm going to be diving further into my education and knowledge of all of that.
So as soon as you get back, you contact me so we can get you back on the air.
Yeah.
And as always, I appreciate our listeners being a part of this conversation and the opportunity to meet with you every Tuesday to talk about those things we all care so deeply about. You can find out further information on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, previous shows at kcbx.org. You can also podcast our shows through iTunes, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Thank you for supporting public radio, KCBX. I leave you with a little tune from Bo Diddley from 1971, a little funk song about pollution.
Sky. Pretty soon we all gone.